I'm with Stephen Moss. I'm John Batchelor. His new book is 10 Birds That Changed the World. First, the snowy egret, a beautiful bird to look at photographs. The plumage wars. This had to do with fashion, maybe from Marie Antoinette, but certainly by the 19th century in Europe and in America. Ladies' hats. Stephen, there's a part of the story that's hard to tell about the abuse of birds with beautiful plumes like the snowy egret. We've changed, Stephen. There's no toleration for this kind of cruelty today.
I hope not. I mean, people still shoot birds, certainly in Europe and America, you know. But what happened here was that, as you say, this was driven by, I suppose, what you'd call posh rich women in New York, in Paris, in London. They wanted to outdo their friends, and they did so, first by wearing ostrich feathers, which were farmed, so that was less of a problem, but then from feathers of wild birds. And not just feathers, people would wear things like a hummingbird as a brooch on their, you know, a dead one on their dress. And the demand for feathers was huge. And of course, where there's demand, there's money to be made. And so men in Florida, ordinary men, would go out and they would kill these birds like snow egrets that nest in big colonies. So you could go in with a boat and you could perhaps kill hundreds of birds in one go. And then they would sell perhaps for a dollar or two each pile of feathers. But those feathers were ultimately sold at prices equivalent to the same weight as gold. So this was a massive industry, huge industry. People were making big profits. And then one day, a young man called Guy Bradley, who'd been he'd helped the shooters himself when he was young, but by his 20s, 30s, late 30s, he'd become a warden, become a ranger in the early days, encouraged by people like Teddy Roosevelt, who was a remarkable conservationist in his own right, as well as being president. And so Guy Bradley confronted a man and his sons who were collecting the egrets. He caught them red-handed, and they shot him. They shot him dead. And this story from Florida went up to New York. It went across to LA and San Francisco. It went to the big cities in America and caused outrage. And it eventually took another 20 years, but it led to the end of the plumage industry because people were so shocked by this.
Simultaneously, or in parallel, there's the development of what we in America call the Audubon Society, and what in Britain is the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds. Although there was another founding group called the Fur Fins and Feathers Folk. I love that one.
They joined forces with the Society for Protection of Birds to eventually become the Royal Society, as you say. But these were, again, what was great about this was these societies were, Audubon and RSPB, were started, founded, run, and promoted by women. And this was a time, certainly in the United Kingdom, where women did not have the vote for another 20 or 30 years. And I think the same is true in the United States. So these women were outraged by the cruelty of these poor birds dying in their millions, and also the fact that they were going to eventually go extinct. And the snow egret nearly followed the dodo and the grey auk and the passenger pigeon down that line. So these women were very, very determined, and they started these societies that we are still members of and still love today.
Yes, the American Audubon Society, National Audubon Society, is a product of those hats. And the hats went away when an influencer, we say today, had her hair cut into a bob, and the hats went away. I've often wondered about the hats that I've seen. Where did they come from? And I went and saw a picture of a woman dressed up at the turn of the century, and there was a snow egret feather right out of the top of her hat. Your book makes me see things I've always seen but not understood, Stephen. So let's go now to a story of climate crisis. This has to do with the emperor penguin of the Arctic and how the expectation is 98% extinct by 2100. I think I get that. That's nearly extinct. It's too much.
That means they'll be doomed. And this is in Antarctica. Again, the parallel with the dodo is incredible, because the dodo, everyone thinks the dodo was stupid because it couldn't fly. But of course it wasn't stupid in context. It had evolved for tens of thousands of years to live on an island where there were no predators. So it was fine. Now, the predator now is humanity, and we're not killing the emperor penguins. We're not going and shooting them or harvesting them or we're not releasing rats or dogs into Antarctica. But what we are doing is by creating the climate crisis, and I'm glad you use that term, it's a term we try to use here now rather than climate change, we are leading a bird that is evolved to nest and breed in the Antarctic winter. You may well have seen it on David Attenborough documentaries on PBS and things. This extraordinary bird that's been doing absolutely fine until now. There's still big numbers of emperor penguins. I saw one many years ago. I went all the way to Antarctica and saw one. But there are big colonies of them, but they are deeply threatened, and they're not the only thing. Lots of birds that migrate through the eastern seaboard of the USA and Canada, lots of birds in Europe, particularly migrants, particularly birds that nest in the Arctic, where things are changing very rapidly, just as they are in the Antarctic, are massively under threat now. And it's a terrible cliche. We use the cliche in Britain, the miner's canary, because coal miners used to take a canary down the mine, because if the canary was sitting on its perch, if it fell off its perch, it was because there was gas that the canary would react to first, and the miners knew they had to get out very quickly or they too would die. That is what this penguin is. Yeah, penguins and these other birds that I mentioned in the last chapter of 10 Birds That Changed the World are the equivalent of the miner's canary. And if we don't listen, we are doomed.
The temperature changes are not just in the Antarctic or the Arctic. They're also on hillsides and cloud forests. And that very much affects birds that we have here in North America, you have in Europe. The warblers are damaged because their insects move with the temperature.
That's right. So insects react rather more quickly than birds do. So migratory birds tend to come back at the same time every year, whether that's in North America or Europe, because they winter in the southern hemisphere. They wait till the day length changes, which of course is constant. That isn't changing because of the climate crisis. And they head north. But the trouble is, by the time they get back to the eastern states of North America or the western states or Europe or Britain, those insects have already been and gone. You know, they've come out a month earlier. And what we're doing is we're messing with the biological world, if you like, in a way that we can't predict what the results will be. But what we can predict is that a few species that are very adaptable, like the raven, will be fine. But most species, like the emperor penguin, won't.
We have 30 seconds, Steve. Stephen, you have a concept called apocalypse fatigue. What is that?
That's the idea that we have heard so much about climate change and it's so huge and so terrifying that we can't grasp it. I am an optimist. I have to be an optimist. And my optimism says that we will, at the 11th hour, we will realise that when we mess with birds, when we mess with wildlife, it bites us back. That's the theme of this book. That's what I've been trying to say. And thank you for being, so incisive and, insightful into what I'm trying to say, the message I'm trying to get across.
Got to meet a raven. Before I move on, Stephen, I have to meet a raven.
John, you are very welcome to come over here and I will show you a raven.
The 10 Birds That Changed the World. Stephen Moss is the author. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.